You're listening to Colchonero Chat, the premier English language podcast on Atletico Madrid and a part of Into the Calderon, the SB Nation home for all things Atletico. I'm Jeremy Barron, my guest on this edition of Colchonero Chat, Into the Calderon staff writer, Robert Walker. Robert Walker is the guest on this edition of Colchonero Chat. Rob is here to break down what was a thrilling encounter between Atletico and Celta Vigo at the Calderon on Sunday. It finished 3-2 to Atletico. A massive, massive 3 points in a game that had everything. Big goals, big misses, and big mistakes. We'll break it all down. Plus, the Copa del Rey final is going to be at the Calderon for the second consecutive year come May 27. But is that necessarily a good thing? Maybe not. That's coming up and a lot more after this.
I guess we're approaching the midterm period, but haven't gotten there quite yet for me, so not too bad.
Yeah.
And yourself?
Yeah, it's going all right. This is spring break is like less than a month away, so that's pretty cool.
Yep, that's gonna be fun.
Yeah, so let's see what we got here. Yeah, we got a lot to talk about from that game.
Yes, I'd say so.
Yeah, that was pretty nuts. Let's see what else. We'll do the whip around Celta, and then I guess we'll talk. I'm not sure. We'll talk about them. I'm gonna do a preview of the Sporting game on Thursday because I have David Cartledge from BN Sports coming on.
Okay.
On Thursday, so that's very awesome. Very excited about that. Really glad he's coming on.
Yeah, that's gonna be a good one.
Yeah, so we'll talk about how the Copa is going to be at the Calderon and why so many people are upset about that.
All right, sounds good to me.
Yeah, a lot of hurt feelings there.
Yes, indeed.
The Frente is going to be silent during the Barcelona game at the end of the month.
Yeah, I saw that on Twitter. That's going to be interesting. It
doesn't fucking help anyone.
No, it's just making everything worse.
Yeah, it'll just make it worse. But we'll talk all about that.
Oh, yes.
In the meantime, as ever, on Mondays, we'll start with the La Liga whip around. The Liga Santander whip around, as it were. We are, how many match days now? 22 match days complete. 22 match days down, 16 to go. Let's track back to Friday at Cornea. Espanyol 1, Real Sociedad 2. Another win for Sociedad. That is their fourth in five in La Liga and 10th win in the last 14 in the league. They get the 2-1 win there. They're up to fifth. On Saturday, Real Betis and Valencia playing out a goalless draw. And another a result later on Saturday reopened the relegation battle. But Valencia is still certainly a part of that. Real Betis and continuing to pick up points at home. They're doing very, very well there. Alaves 0, Barcelona 6. This was a bit of a surprise, as this was supposed to be the opening salvo in the 3-month run up to the Copa del Rey final, which is going to be a very different game from this one. However, it was a bit overshadowed by Alex Vidal's horrible, horrible ankle injury. The human ankle is not supposed to look like that. I've been told.
Yeah, that was a pretty horrific challenge. And unfortunately, our own Theo Hernandez involved.
The worst part of it is that Theo was involved, and it wasn't even a dirty challenge. It was an accident, and just horrible, horrible injury. We hope Alex Vidal gets better from there. That's just horrific to see. So thoughts are with him. At San Mamés, Athletic 2, Deportivo La Coruña 1. Aritz Aduriz on his 36th birthday, scoring the match winner in the 89th minute as Athletic come back from 1-0 down to take the 2-1 win. At El Sadar, Osasuna 1, Real Madrid 3. This was 1-1 on the hour before Zinedine Zidane went on a tactical... Let me start that thought again. This was 1-1 on the hour before Zidane changed his tactics. Isco scored minutes after that, and Madrid pretty much cruised from there to run out 3-1 winners. On Sunday, another draw for Villarreal, this time with Malaga, 1-1. That is Villarreal's fourth draw in the last six. They've won only once in the last six.
They should have lost that game.
Yeah, Malaga were great. So this was at La Cerámica, not very good for Villarreal. That is their ninth draw of the season, 9. Again, you can't really make up ground on the top four, the top five, if you're drawing all these games. They are now 5 points out of fifth and 6 points out of the fourth and final Champions League place.
Yeah, that gap is widening.
Yeah, as it usually does around this time of the year. Big game at the bottom of the table, also on Sunday. Leganites nil, Sporting Gijón 2, a relegation six-pointer that Sporting come out on top of away. At Leganites, that is Sporting's first away win of the season. Really, really, really good time to get it. Yeah, really good time to get it. I think Leganites' winless run is now at 11, I want to say. Yeah, I think it's at 11. Whatever it is, it's really, really bad. And yeah, they kind of had to have this one because they are now definitely in the thick of the relegation race. Las Palmas nil, Sevilla 1. Joaquin Correa scoring the winner 10 minutes from time on about as route one a football move as you're going to get. Goal kick from Sergio Rico, knocked down by, I think it was Ibora, and then Correa rushes in and slots home. And Sevilla, again, finding a late winner out of really nothing, which they have done several times this season. And the game earlier Monday, a second consecutive 4-0 win for Eibar. This time they thrashed Granada by that scoreline. So let's start at the bottom of the table first, because we usually do the top of the table. In 15th, Valencia on 20 points, Depor in 16th on 19 points, Leganes in 17th on 18 points, and then Sporting Granada and Osasuna on 16, 13, and 10, respectively. So now the relegation race has gone from three, maybe four teams to six teams who are now definitely in the thick of it.
Yeah, and there's not really, and all those teams have looked very shaky so far this season. And Valencia in particular, of course, have been the big surprise, the biggest team down there, and they're in trouble as well, so they're going to have to fight to get out of it.
Yep, and so the relegation race just got very, very interesting, in part thanks to Leganés and Sporting. Top of the table looks like this. Real Madrid still top, in spite of the two games in hand. They have a one-point edge over Barcelona on 48 points. Sevilla in third on 46 points. Atletico in fourth on 42. Sociedad on 41, Villarreal on 36. It's really now a race for sixth. I think there's a pretty, that 5 point gap between Sociedad and Villarreal is a big one. Villarreal on 36, Athletic on 35, Eibar on 35, Espanyol on 32. So yeah, the Europa League race, the relegation race, both very interesting now.
Yeah, definitely. I could see Villarreal dropping out of that. They've just had so many draws, which is better than losing, but if they're not picking up the requisite points, they're going to be in trouble trying to get in the Europa League.
Yeah, got to start winning these games, as we've mentioned before. Now, the one result we did not talk about in our La Liga whip around, which we will talk about now, it was the game of the weekend. Atletico Madrid 3, Celta Vigo 2. That's Atletico 3, Celta 2. Well, this was quite the game, quite the match. Usually we get these kind of games when Celta come to town. At Balaidos earlier this season was a 4-goal thriller. This one was a 5-goal thriller. And this had a little bit of everything. We had howlers. We had missed penalty. We had another missed penalty. We had some incredible goals. And we had an Atletico win. And it was a big, big win, Robert.
Absolutely, and anytime your team comes back from being down twice in a game, it's always a good thing.
Yeah, you know, you wouldn't believe it, but
two different occasions.
You wouldn't believe it, but now Atletico are third in the form table over the last six, four wins and two draws.
They've been doing what they need to be doing and just picking up points as much as they can in the league. Granted, they've had some. I guess their toughest, most recent game was away at MMS, but other than that, they've been on a good run recently.
Yeah, and it certainly doesn't seem like it, because there's still something that isn't really quite clicking, especially in the league. We've talked about this before, how it has become inadvisable to view Atletico's league form as, in a cumulative sense, it's become inadvisable to view it as, oh, this is, they've turned the corner, this means something more than just one game. We've been trying to take these games in a vacuum, but the way Atletico came back at the end of this game, when it looked like all was lost and they would be out of the Champions League places, I think that was a pretty strong display of character. and backs up what Simeone said midweek after the Copa elimination at Barcelona, saying he's kind of rediscovered his Atletico, how Atletico best play, and coming back.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, coming back against this team in these circumstances, I think backs that up.
Yeah, absolutely. Celta have been extremely good this season in numerous competitions, and Simeone, more than we have been in the past few weeks, has been more confident that his Atleti have returned after the second leg of the Copa del Rey semi. So we'll see if from now until the end of the season, if they can keep this good form going.
Yeah, so let's go through this one. In the fifth minute, Celta opened the scoring thanks to Miguel Angel Moya. It was a corner. I can't remember who took it for Celta, but Moya comes out to try to punch it away, and instead it goes right onto Gustavo Cabral's head, and he you know, can't say no to that gift. He heads it in, 1-0 Celta.
Yeah, it's a shame for Moya. He's been really good in Oblak's absence. So it's a shame to see him concede a goal like that, but it was a really terrible punch. I mean, really bad.
Like, that's kind of the basics of goalkeeping right there, right? Stay in your net. There was no reason for him to come out and slap that away. Someone was going to clear it. It was just a really, really poor decision. And he cleared it right onto Cabral's head. And just an easy, easy goal.
Yeah, it was a great assist.
Yeah, great assist. And Koke, bless him, did his best to try to clear it off the line, but just evaded him, so... Yep, Atletico behind early, but they weren't behind for very long, Rob, because we had the Fernando Torres show.
Yes, El Nino. It was a classic performance from him today. We had everything.
Yeah. Yes, it did. Let's start with the good. That goal. One of the goals of the season, not just for Atletico, but in La Liga. Took up a pass from Yannick Carrasco, who I want to talk about in full in a minute. Really good first touch. Back to the goal, lofts this outrageous Chilena past Sergio Alvarez and in and into the net, into the right corner. He slips and falls as he lofts this in, but he totally meant to do it, 100%, and it was an amazing goal. And the El Nino of old right there, he rolled back the years there.
He really did, and I agree with you that he meant it. He clearly checked back to see if there was other option, and there wasn't. And it was a sensational chip over the goalkeeper. Really, really fantastic.
You think he's done, then he pulls you back in, you know? That was an amazing, sensational strike. And that's his fifth league goal of the season. He's scored in back-to-back league games now. Is he back? Is he not? The calendar's turned to February, so he started scoring incredible goals again.
Hey, and Atleti needed someone to start putting in the goals on a regular basis, and if Fernando Torres is the man to do it, then all the better.
I think Dermot Corrigan from ESPN tweeted this. Torres saw off Mandzukic and Jackson in previous years to end the season as Atletico's number 9. Looks like he's going to do the same to Kevin Gamero this season. And you know what? I wouldn't put it past him.
Nope, me neither.
When the calendar turns to February, the dude just goes off. He did it last year, helped Atletico to the Champions League final, and kept him in La Liga till the second to last week. He may be warming up again. We'll see.
Yeah, let's hope so. We need him.
Yeah, the rest of the first half, though, Celta kind of took... Celta were kind of lucky to go into this 1-1 because Atletico missed another penalty. Yannick Carrasco took a pretty outrageous dive in the box that should have been a yellow card. I think Atletico would have preferred it was a yellow card because it would have spared Torres from missing the penalty.
Yeah, missing their sixth penalty of the year,
Nine, yes. Torres took this one, and you know what? This was actually a pretty good penalty. This was actually one where he was unlucky to miss. This wasn't like Gamero's midweek where he just missed everything. This wasn't like Griezmann's last weekend where it was just really poorly taken and easily saved. Torres was like 2 or 3 inches from this going in under the bar. This was a great penalty that just was just off.
Yeah, and as disappointing as it is to miss a penalty, it is somewhat satisfying to have a ball that struck that hard slam off the crossbar in the way that it did. It was you know, could have been worse, I suppose.
Like, he didn't miss everything. It wasn't saved easily. I mean, again, just two or three.
Oh, my God.
Just 2 or 3 inches, and this ball is tucked in perfectly under the bar, and Atletico lead 2-1. But that's just how Atletico's penalties have gone this season. They've missed 6 of 9 this year, so that's really, really bad.
Yeah, they got to figure out someone who's good at penalties.
Yeah, amazingly, it hasn't come back to hurt them too many times, though, except midweek, but they were going to lose to Barcelona anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
It's pretty amazing.
Well, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, later on in the year. And they're decent in penalty shootouts as well. We saw this last year against PSV.
Yeah.
So I don't know what it is.
It's probably just a confident. You got to think it's a confidence thing at this point, a mental thing at this point. But yeah, the next one.
Penalties in a year.
The next one,
pretty horrendous.
I'd give the next one to Torres because this one was very close. It was the best penalty an Atleti player has taken in a while, so I'd give him the next one.
Yeah,
he
might as well.
Yep, so you had the missed penalty. Really end-to-end stuff here. Josebed hit one off the post, the outside of the post with Moya beat, around the same time, a few minutes before the penalty, actually. And it was a pretty even first half. Celta were kind of lucky that it went in 1-1. And in the second half, Celta, for almost the entirety of the second half, were just overwhelmingly good. Just overran Atleti, had a ton of possession in the final third. They finished with about 54% possession for the game. That was up near 60 at one point. They were very, very good in the second half.
Yeah, that's right. They definitely kicked on in the second half. And they needed to, and they got their goal for it.
Yeah, Eduardo Berizzo made very positive subs. Daniel Vaz came on. Teo Bangonda came on for Josebed and Pione Sisto, respectively, and Daniel Vaz created the go-ahead goal about 12 minutes from time, actually. Iago Aspas played a ball to Vaz on the right-hand side. Vaz cut it back to John Guidetti, who was drifting from the left-hand side to the middle. Atletico's defense very, very slow to get back, out of position, and Guidetti just slotted home pretty easily past Moya, and at that point, it looked like, you know, all was doom, all was gloom, all was blackness. Celta were going to get out of the Calderon with a 2-1 win.
Yeah, it was looking pretty poor at that point. And Atleti haven't scored a whole lot of goals this season. Well, they did earlier on, but not recently. So it was a bit concerning. I thought they may get out of it with a draw, but not necessarily the win.
Yeah, especially from losing positions, Atleti haven't scored a lot of goals. But there was more to come, as in the 86th minute, Yannick Carrasco with just a gorgeous, gorgeous goal. My goodness. Atleti had really put the pressure on after Guidetti's goal. I think it was Roncaglia headed this out right to Carrasco, who hit just this gorgeous volley into the net. And I didn't notice it at first, but he put some spin on it. It looked like a slider in baseball. He put a spin on it, and it just lofted beautifully, lodging itself in the back of the net. Sergio Alvarez had no chance to stop it. What a way to score your first goal in more than 2 months.
He needed it, and there was you could tell there's a lot of frustration in that strike, and man, it was a beautiful one as well on the volley from outside of the box. I mean, they don't come much prettier than that.
I think if he had hit it with all his might, it might have gone straight at Sergio, but he didn't. He put a little bit of spin on this, a little curve on it, and it lodged itself in the back of the net where no one could get it. Bottom right corner, and it's 2-2, just like that. And then it would be 3-2, as the subs combined to give Antoine Griezmann the winning goal. Angel Correa with a great cross to Kevin Gamero, who headed down easily for Griezmann to slot in with his right foot. He doesn't score very many goals with his right foot, but he scored this one.
Yeah, I really quite enjoyed this goal. I thought it was a lot better, really, than it sort of looked at first. It was really a great assisted header from Kevin Gamero.
The build-up was great.
It was, yeah, really good build-up. He put it on the plate for Antoine as well. And, you know, to give up a good shot that he had from a heading position and to lay it to Griezmann for a tap-in is what you want to see.
Yeah, because it was Gabby who played the initial ball to Correa, and then Correa just lofted a great cross to Gamero, and then no one is tracking Griezmann, who is onside. Gamero just heads down easily to him, and with the right foot, Grizzy sticks it, and it's Griezmann did not have a good game, not have a very good game at all. He disappeared for large parts of it. Thought in the first half he was actually kind of good spreading the ball around, but he popped up for this one, and that's sometimes what the big name stars do. They just pop up when you need them most, and boy did Atletico need Griezmann to score that goal.
If what I'm looking at is correct, that was his one and only shot and shot on target of this game. So
I believe so. Yeah. Good time for it.
Good time to score.
Yeah. So Atleti complete the excellent, excellent comeback to win 3-2, stay in fourth place for another week just by the skin of their teeth, but they got it done. I think the team showed a lot of character. I mentioned this at the outset. They showed a lot of character. What else can we take from this win?
Well, I think the return of Carrasco into some sort of form will be really big going forward, not only in the league, but in the Champions League as well. He needed to score, and he needed to score a good goal and get back into form. And it's not just the goal. He had a lot of shots in this game, and he was doing a lot offensively. Had some of the most touches on the team. He was really doing quite well, 94% pass accuracy. I mean, he was a star in this game.
Yeah, you could tell very early on that Yannick was going to be very involved in this game. He had to be, because he hadn't scored since November 27 at Osasuna. 64 touches for him, and 6 shots, 3 of which were on target per who scored, so he was more active than he has been in the past. He drifted a lot toward the middle, which is, I think, kind of where he's at his best. Simeone has experimented with giving him a freer role this season, but it hasn't always come off. In this game, it came off, and Carrasco thrived in it. And it's always been kind of difficult to work in. Not only you have Griezmann roaming all over the place, you have to give Carrasco the space to roam about all over the place. And that's been tough to give two players in such a disciplined system. It's been tough to give two players that kind of freedom. In this game, it worked. It left Atletico more open, but they managed to save the best for last.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it is difficult, as you said, for them to necessarily know who they're supposed to be tracking or marking at each particular time. So it did work well in this game. And Carrasco, in a game where Griezmann didn't really show up until he scored, he did very well.
Yeah, the substitutes, I think, were on point for Simeone. That's something else we can take from this game. Juan Fran had to come off at halftime as he suffered an injury to his hamstring. The club confirmed it today. He has a little bit of a tear in his hamstring. Not too serious. Hopefully we'll be back for the first leg in Leverkusen. But Shimi Vrsaljko came on for him at halftime, and Vrsaljko held the fort down really well. Thought he played much better than Juan Fran did in the first half. Correa and Gamero both came on in the final 20 minutes with the score even at 1-1, and they both played a part in the winning goal. I think Simeone got away with leaving Correa on the bench till the 71st minute. He got away with playing Saul for 70 minutes because Saul was not very good in this game. But you know, it worked out. He made the right choices and pushed the right buttons at the right time. He really is one of the best at doing this.
Yeah, he is. And as you said, those two, they combined for the winning goal. So you can't really knock those two substitutions. They worked out very well. Correa's been good in recent weeks. And, I mean, the reality is Saul just is not a winger at all. And we saw that again in this game. Yeah, he can do a job, but not very convincingly or for very long.
Yeah, it's not really any more a matter of where Saul plays. He doesn't convince me right now. He hasn't convinced me for a while. And this was a question that came up on our last podcast when I had Renato Gonsalves from Barca Blaugrans on. Is Saul really at his best in a 4-4-2 system, or is he better in a 4-3-3? I think he's better in a 4-3-3, and that's just not a system that Atletico are going to play very often.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The more midfield partners he has, the more freedom he has to go on sort of the runs he likes to do, and as well he has more freedom, and rather than being constrained on the wing where he's very limited in terms of what he can do. It's definitely not his strong position. He's most definitely a square peg in a round hole at this point on the wing.
Yeah, that's right. He is at his best in a box-to-box role as a central midfielder, but I think a 4-4-2 system kind of restricts him. He needs to have more freedom. I think in a 4-3-3, he can really do that. He can play on either side of center or in the center in a three-man midfield. And that's just not a tactical system that Simeone has played, I think, often enough. It's not a system he prefers. He prefers the 4-4-2 as he has since he started coaching Atleti. And that's just not great news for Saul. But hopefully he kicks on and he finds a way. Because he's had kind of a difficult season. His form.
Yeah, and he had such a great year last year. It's really a shame for him.
In this system, too. He had a great year in a 4-4-2 system, playing kind of a very similar role to the one he's currently playing. But the form is just not there, and not really much you can do at this point. Simeone does not seem to want to give Tomas a try. Yeah, that's kind of where he's at right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, in reality, the Gabby and Koke midfield does work best, which is a shame for both Saul and Thomas. I'd be interested if there were still Copa games or something like that, where there would be a little bit of rotation, if we could see a Thomas and Saul midfield. I think that would be very interesting.
Yeah,
I'd like to see that at some point.
We saw that,
I doubt it.
Saw that against Guijuelo in the round of 32, and it worked out pretty well. That said, that was a Guijuelo in the...
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
Yeah, and pretty deep down the league pyramid. But I really do want to see Thomas play more. Cholo just does not seem to prefer him. He seems to prefer Saul more, playing, in, like you said, as a square peg in a round hole. Koke played a bit more on the right this game than in the center. Unsurprisingly, he didn't play his best game. Gabby was very, very good. And Carrasco was great. So kind of half and half in the midfield this game, which did leave Atletico more open. Left the pretty inexperienced center-back pairing of Lucas and Stefan Savic exposed. I don't think either player played particularly well. It led to... Especially on the Guidetti goal, you could see this, that Atleti were just cut open on that goal.
Yeah, absolutely. And without a leader like Godin in the back four, it is a lot more nerve-wracking to watch those four back there. With Felipe being the most experienced after Juan Fran came off at halftime, it was a little bit nerve-wracking at times.
Yeah. Yeah. Also nerve-wracking was, you're down 2-1 at home in a must-win game, but those two goals in a minute 57, enough to see Atleti through in this one, a 3-2 win and holding down fourth place. We do have a question about this game before we move on to other more exciting things. One from a user on Twitter, another I have self-generated. Do you think the Carrasco criticism has been justified? And have we, the Potters, noticed how disinterested Griezmann has been of late? Kind of in response to the overwhelming criticism of Carrasco. This is from at Johnny's Footy Blog on Twitter.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I do actually think that the criticism of Carrasco was justified. He had really not been very effective in recent weeks, but we know that he is quality and that he would come through eventually. I think most people accepted that, and he just needed to step it up. And in this game, he most certainly did that. And we can hope that he kicks on for the rest of the season, I suppose.
Yeah, he went 2.5 months without scoring, and he's one of the most important players at the club. So I think on some level, a lot of levels, the criticism was justified. He wasn't scoring. He had a bad attitude. There were the whispers that he and Cholo had a bit of an argument that contributed to this poor run of form. But hopefully this is a turning point for Carrasco, and he's able to kick on for the rest of the season. The second half of the question, have we noticed how disinterested Griezmann has looked? Rob, you want to take that one first?
Sure. It's a difficult one. Reading footballers' body languages is always a very dangerous game. I don't know if I'd say he'd look disinterested, more sort of frustrated, which is understandable given how this team's been going through a rough patch recently. I think people are probably reading more into it than there actually is. Of course, none of us really know what's going on within the camp, but I think it's a bit overblown, honestly.
Yeah, and it doesn't help when he's being linked with, you know, the deal closing with Man United every week. It doesn't help that those reports are popping up weekly. I think some of it has been he's looked a bit lost out there, and it's very, very rare for Griezmann. Earlier this season, I think you could definitely, as I did, you could argue it was fatigue. You could argue that the reason he wasn't popping up so much, the reason he looked pretty, he disappeared a lot, he looked out of sync, was because he had played a ton of football in 2016. I think you could argue that his head is maybe in a different place. I also think that Griezmann is very committed to the cause. He has stated multiple times his love for the club, his love for Simeone, and how much more he has to learn at the club before he leaves, when he leaves. It could be this summer, it could not be this summer. I'm not sure how much of it is down to disinterest. I think that is a popular theory for some fans to rally around. I'm not disabusing fans of that theory. You can believe whatever the hell you want. But I think it has more to do with... I'd lost my train of thought.
It's been a weird year for the club in general.
Especially in La Liga.
In a weird headspace at this current moment in time.
Yeah, you got me back on track. I mean,
yeah.
A lot of players have looked better in the Copa and in the Champions League, because this Atletico, I think more than previous versions of this team, the disparity between league form and tournament form has never really been more, more different. It has never been such a stark difference as there has been this season. Atletico were a totally different club in the group stage of the Champions League than they have been for the... we're just about through the majority of the league season, where Atletico have been kind of topsy-turvy. It's stabilized of late because they've now... Actually, I think that's seven unbeaten now. They're seven unbeaten in La Liga, not just six. It's stabilized of late, but they're still not playing it. They're still not operating at their best. And in the Copa, they were great. In the group stage, they were great in the Champions League. So Griezmann isn't really the problem. He's more of the symptom, I think, in that sense. And I'm not sure if it's as much disinterest as it is just maybe not necessarily playing well. He's had a disappointing season. I think we can agree on that, that it's been a season where Griezmann was expected to continue his rise as one of the game's stars. And he's taken a step back.
Yeah, and I think that was that sort of attitude, and you can understand why he's feeling that way. It was kind of backed up by the quote that came out by Carrasco today about him being frustrated with himself not performing rather than being with Simeone. And I think it's probably a similar case with Griezmann. It's understandable that he might be a bit miffed.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't think I have anything else to add to that.
All right, cool.
All right. Let's move on now. Let's talk about the news that came out today that the Copa del Rey final is going to be at the Vicente Calderon for the second year in a row. It is very possible, though not confirmed yet, that that is going to be the very last game of football ever played at the Calderon. Barcelona and Alaves are going to get together on the banks of the Manzanares on May 27 for that game. And so the story goes, after that, that's it for the Calderon. Rob, what do you think of this?
Well, it was interesting. There's a lot of drama with this. I think it's odd that for the last game at such a famous old stadium that you'd want it to be another team, particularly a title rival, playing in the stadium for the last time. I think that's a bit weird. I do wonder, because there have been rumors as well that the stadium called Wanda is going to potentially be a potential permanent home for the final of the Copa del Rey.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know how true that is, but you could see how potentially the club may want to try to set a precedent for something like that happening.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. There have been those discussions about making a stadium called Wanda the permanent home for the Copa, which would be, I think, a big relief for a lot of clubs and certainly a lot of fans who have to sweat out where the hell their team is going to play the final. Year after year after year, because no one knows where it's going to be until the end of February. That's an interesting point you bring up. I think if that is indeed the final game of the Calderon, which I am not, still not fully convinced it will be, if that is indeed the final game and Atletico aren't playing in it, I think that's kind of an injustice, right? This is Atletico's, it's always going to be the spiritual home. For 50 years, Atletico have played at the Calderon. And for them not to be closing it out before they move to a pretty unpopular stadium in an unpopular part of Madrid for Atletico fans, I think supporters are right to be upset about this. The club is trying to make more money as well. That is definitely factoring into the thinking, because as we've discussed before on this program and on the blog, Atletico are still in some financial straits, and this new stadium is not lightening the load any.
No, and I think part of what you just said about the financial troubles is why this may not end up being the last game ever there. I think they'll probably have some testimonials and, you know, other various related activities there before the stadium is officially closed, just to squeeze as much money out of it as possible, like other clubs have done in the past, like West Ham, etc.
Yeah, who knows? There could still be that option. I mean, we don't know for sure. What's going to happen after Atletico host Athletic in the final round of La Liga this season, in May? After the Copa final, it's still all very uncertain, and it's uncomfortable that for many that it's still uncertain. At any rate, this announcement pissed a lot of fans off. I think rightfully so, and it pissed off the Frente Atletico so much, the ultras group in South Stand, that they are going to be silent during Atletico's league game against Barcelona on February 26th, which is kind of a big game.
Yeah, you can say that.
Yeah.
Exactly. It'll certainly be an interesting spectacle to see. And you really can. I agree with you. You can certainly sympathize with being annoyed about this, as the home of the club, to just give it away for someone else's final and someone else's celebration isn't exactly the best way to send off a stadium.
Yeah, I saw it termed today that Atletico were whoring out its history for €4. Now, yes, I may not go that far, but I will say that if the Copa final is indeed the final game at the Vicente Calderon, then that's too bad, because this is a stadium that has been through it all. It has been through Atletico's glory years in the 70s. It went through the famous double winners in 96, the relegation in 2000, all the way up to now with this new golden age with Simeone in charge, in the dugout. It's seen it all, and I think it is kind of disrespectful to have two other teams close out the Calderon. Then again, they could be playing a Champions League qualifier there in August. We don't know.
Right, exactly. Especially if the same cup wand is not quite done. And the other thing is, I think probably a lot of the frustration is built up because of all the drama with the badge and with the stadium, and that they may end up having to sell players to fund this project, et cetera, et cetera. It's out in the middle of nowhere in Madrid. It's hard to get to. So I think a lot of the pressure has been building, and you can understand how the ultras would lash out in this way.
Yeah, the badge has been an issue for 2 months now. It's going to continue to be an issue, which I understand the controversy about the badge, from the standpoint of this is a departure from the historic badge of the historic shield of Atletico. But I sympathize more with the supporters who are upset that the Calderon's final game is set to not be played by Atletico. That's annoying. That is annoying. And
yeah, I would say that's a more reasonable thing to be annoyed about.
Yeah. However, I don't think the Frente being silent during that game against Barcelona is going to solve much. It's only going to hurt Atleti in a game that they're kind of going to have to play well in, and they're going to have to get something out of to continue their hunt for the top four, even top three.
Yeah, I agree. I get that Barcelona is the team in the final, but still, that's a game where you need your 12th man in support of the club, and it certainly played a role in many big games in the past, so it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah. Yeah, as ever with Atletico, it's just wait and see how it plays out.
Yep, that's how we roll.
Yeah. Before you go, man of the match, mattress maker of the match from the Celta Vigo game.
I would say Carrasco, in my opinion. I think he had a great game, and in a game where he needed to have a great game, he really turned up.
Yeah, I'd say Carrasco as well. And Torres was really good for his 70. He played, what, 75 minutes, I think? Yeah, he was really good. If he'd scored that penalty, he probably would have given it to him, but them's the breaks.
Yeah, agreed. Yep, they both scored wonderful goals.
Yeah.
You know, it's really personal opinion which of those two goals you like better. At the end of the day, they're both fantastic.
Yeah, okay, rate the goals from this game from worst to best. Rate the three goals from worst to best. I realize I should have done this earlier, but I'm doing it now, so deal with it.
All right, the two Celtics ones are definitely the worst.
And well, yeah.
I'm just saying that because I'm, you know, opinionated about this, whatever. But they were. The first one was horrific. I would say then the, of course, the Griezmann one is third best. And then second would be, oh, God. This is so difficult. I go for the Carrasco one and then the Torres one. The Torres one's just a ridiculous piece of skill. It's hard not to love that.
I think I'd go Carrasco 3, Griezmann 2, Torres 1. The Griezmann goal I give bonus points to because the build-up was beautiful, and you could see it developing as you watch it. Like, yep, that's going to be a goal. Just as soon as you finish it, it's going to be a goal. Like, you could see it happening in real time that it was going to be a goal.
It was such a lovely goal.
Yeah, I mean, Carrasco's was stunning because he got that little dip on it. And then Torres was, like, the possibly Atletico's goal of the season so far.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, I hope we get a better one than that, but it was sensational. And not a bicycle kick and not a conventional chip. It was quite special.
Yeah, it was. So we got Champions League this week. Atletico, of course, do not play till next week, and we will be covering everything you need to know about Atletico's last 16 tie with Bayer Leverkusen as the UCL returns. What are you most excited for this week, though?
In terms of the Champions League or in terms of Atletico?
The Champions League, yeah. Just the tie is going on. The first leg is going on this week.
Yes, indeed it is. Well, I'm trying to think of what's the most competitive game. Real Madrid-Napoli. I think Napoli have a very good chance in that game. I've watched them a lot this year, and they play fantastic football, and I really quite rate them. So I hope they can get the job done at the Bernabeu on Wednesday.
Oh, they're great, but I think Madrid are just going to rip right through them.
It's blind hope.
Yeah. A boy can dream, but I think that Madrid are just going to rip right through Napoli. As much as I rate them and I think their style of football is intoxicating, they're not good enough to beat Real Madrid. For me, Benfica-Dortmund could be pretty tasty.
Yeah.
Potentially.
Yeah, especially away at Benfica, that'll be interesting. And PSG-Barcelona.
I'm so tired of those two.
I don't know how Unai Emery will do, but we'll see.
He's beaten Barcelona once in 23 tries, so I think you can predict that he's not going to do well.
Yeah,
with
really
a reasonable degree of certainty.
Fraud, did they?
No, they didn't.
Yeah, and they're losing it in Ligue 1 as well, so they're in trouble.
Well, and what's the fourth one this week?
Arsenal and Bayern Munich.
Oh God, really?
Yes, for the 555th time.
Oh, God. So there's two I'm really not interested in. One I'm kind of interested in Real Madrid and Napoli. And another one I'm pretty interested in Benfica and Dortmund. So, yeah, I think the best ones come next week. As bad as Leicester's playing, I want to see them against Sevilla.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see how they'll do.
As
because
awful
I'm not
as
sure
they've
if
been.
European clubs have really picked up on their weird counterattack. Very traditional English style quite yet.
that's true. Yeah. And then, of course, Atletico play next Tuesday. And again, we'll be covering it all over the place on the blog. So be on the lookout for some awesome content relating to that. All right. What else we got, Rob?
I think that's about it for us this week.
All right.
Unless you want to talk about Vitolo, but that's weird.
Oh, yeah. Okay. We can mention that briefly. Vitolo gave an interview to Spanish radio today, Cadena Cope, saying he was very close to signing for Atletico last summer before he renewed his contract with Sevilla. And I guess one can hope he comes even closer this summer. I think he would be a wonderful signing.
Yeah, he's a really versatile midfielder, and he's been extremely good for Sevilla for quite some time, and he really can play all over the place, and
yeah.
He has this season. One of those players are very rare. and they're a great use to have in the squad.
Yeah, much rather would have bought him over Gamero. If I had to pick one Sevilla player to buy this summer.
Yeah, I would agree. and he's younger, so, you know.
Yeah, he is. He's, what is he, 28, 27?
Yep, 27.
Yeah. Yeah, so we'll see if that does come off this summer in what is sure to be a fascinating summer at Atletico in spite of the transfer ban.
Yes, exactly. We'll see how that goes.
The world turns ever on. All right, so here comes the sign-off message. I'd like to thank my guest, Rob Walker.
Glad to be on, as always.
You can follow Rob on Twitter at Trappin. That is T-R-A-U-P-P-I-N. You can follow me, Jeremy Barron, at J-B Barron. That's J-B-B-E-R-E-N. Follow the blog on Twitter at Into the Calderon. And like us on Facebook at facebook.com/Into the Calderon. You can subscribe to all new and archived episodes. You can subscribe and listen to all new and archived episodes of Golden Arrow Chat on the following platforms: iTunes, Stitcher, Acast, Google Play, and TuneIn. Leave a rating and a review on iTunes. It would be really great if you could do that. And I think that's everything. I'm going to say that's everything. So thank you so much for listening to this edition of Colchonero Chat, and we will catch you next time. Adios.
Goodbye.